symphony.org.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. America's eating habits have led to an epidemic in obesity. Worse, they have increased the incidence of type 2 diabetes. 26 million Americans have it. In the Carolinas, 1 million people are affected by it. In Charlotte, type 2 diabetes is considered a public health epidemic. Worse, 9 out of 10 of the 79 million people who have pre-diabetes don't even know they have it. All of that is background to explain why Carolina's healthcare system and the YMCA of Greater Charlotte have set out to tackle the issue with a new initiative called the Pre-D Challenge. But this initiative doesn't just involve them, it potentially involves you. So here to help us explore both the problem and this potential solution is Dr. Kelly Dunn, chief of the Endocrinology Division of Carolina's Medical Center. Welcome to you. Dr. Zev Neuwirth is Chief Clinical Officer of Carolina's Healthcare System Medical Group. Sue Dissinger is Wellness Director for the YMCA of Greater Charlotte. And Beverly Hager is a person with diabetes who has learned to minimize the effects of the disease through some management techniques that we'll get into as the program goes on. So welcome to all of you. Good morning.
Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you.
We've all recovered from yesterday, I take it? Okay. Well, we don't talk about that. We've all heard of diabetes, and many of us understand that it can be controlled by insulin to a point. But what exactly is this disease? Dr. Dunn.
Well, in short, diabetes is a collection of diseases that lead to high blood glucose levels, and that's due to either a defect in the production of insulin from the pancreas or the body's ability to respond to insulin. And these lead to high sugar levels.
And there are two types. There's type 1 and type 2, and we're going to be talking today about type 2. But what's the difference between the two types?
So in type 1, that's traditionally thought of as an autoimmune disease, and typically this is what we think about of juvenile diabetes, although it can be diagnosed all the way through adulthood. And that's where you have an autoimmune destruction of the pancreas, so you don't make any insulin. Type 2 is different. It's a little bit more heterogeneous collection, but it's basically the diabetes we think of in adulthood where you make insulin, but the body has stopped responding to it. So it's insulin resistance, and that's the one that's typically linked to lifestyle.
And by that, you mean being overweight, not eating properly,
correct,
not exercising.
Sedentary lifestyle, exactly.
How much of it has to – oh, gosh, don't say that. how much of it has to do with being overweight?
A lot, actually. There does have to be a genetic predisposition because there certainly are people who are overweight or obese who don't develop diabetes. But with that genetic predisposition, the excess weight actually leads to that insulin resistance, which then makes the pancreas just basically not be able to keep up with the load. And that's when you start developing the elevated blood sugars.
And can you get type 2 diabetes and not be overweight, not be overweight?
Absolutely.
And be active.
Correct. You can certainly have people who are lean with type 2 diabetes, and I have to remind myself of that because we think so much about overweight, obesity, sedentary lifestyle, but certainly have a lot of patients who actually are at their ideal body weight, but still, unfortunately, because of those genetic predispositions.
Technically, is it a disease of the pancreas? Because the pancreas produces natural insulin and it no longer can.
You could essentially say that, because with the insulin resistance, what happens is the pancreas just cannot make enough insulin to keep up with the load that it needs. That's when you actually develop the elevated blood sugar. So it is a disease of the pancreas to some extent.
And so the pancreas is producing insulin to what? Take down the sugar level, eat the sugar levels up?
Right.
What is it exactly?
The way we explain it to patients is that the cells have to use glucose for energy, for growth, to do their job. And insulin is the key that lets it in the door. You have to have insulin to be able to get glucose into the cells and out of the bloodstream.
Okay. And what happens in diabetes? You say it can't keep up, but why can't it keep up?
Well, eventually the pancreas has to work so hard, it has to produce so much extra insulin when you develop this insulin resistance that we think of with type 2 diabetes, that it's not able, eventually it loses ability. And that's actually an area under research now. Why does it lose its ability? There's plaque deposition, et cetera. But the pancreas is not able to make as much insulin as it needs to overcome the resistance. And eventually it actually loses its ability to even make insulin towards the end.
Now, I mentioned in the beginning that you can have what is called pre-diabetes for a very long time and not even know it.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Neuwirth, what is pre-diabetes?
So as Dr. Dunn was saying, there's type 1 diabetes, which is only about 5%. 95% or so of diabetes is this type 2. And the precursor, so 95% is type 2, and it's mostly a disease of lifestyle, as I think you were alluding to, which is, and the good part about that, that means that for over 90% of diabetes, there's actually something you can do for it as opposed to just going directly to insulin treatment. So there's some intervention, there's prevention, and that's why we're particularly excited about it. And the precursor, before you get type 2 diabetes, you get prediabetes. You're in this prediabetes stage. And prediabetes is a pre-disease, but it's actually associated with risks, with cardiovascular risks.
So what, as a doctor, what do you see when you detect prediabetes in somebody? What are you seeing?
Well, that's the thing about it. To detect it, it's really it's a blood test at this point in time. It's there's three different types of blood tests, but it is a blood test. So you could be walking around for years with prediabetes, or with actually type 2 diabetes without even knowing about it. In fact, the literature will tell us that the typical person with type 2 diabetes isn't diagnosed until they're about 3 to 5 years into their disease. So think about this. They've already had somewhere between 5 and 10 years of prediabetes, which carries a risk for strokes and heart attacks and damage to your eyes and your kidneys. So you're walking around 5 to 10 years with prediabetes, and then you're walking around with another 5 years with type 2 diabetes before you're diagnosed. And so it's essential to get diagnosed early. And again, the way to do that is through this blood test.
How can somebody go for 15 years and not know that they have the prediabetes condition for a decade and the diabetes for a half a decade? How can they not know? Because they didn't get physicals?
Well, and there's not a lot of symptoms until the blood sugars get very, very high. So you can walk around with a blood sugar of 250, which is quite high. That's over 100 points higher than normal, and have no symptoms whatsoever. You're not going to feel poorly. So often I work in the hospital. We'll find people who come into the hospital, and we sort of say, congratulations, you know, along with whatever, you also have diabetes but didn't know it. And that's part of the problem. It has to get very high before people really come in with symptoms.
But yeah, I know. But it can be diagnosed, as Dr. Neuwirth said, with three different blood tests. Does that mean those blood tests are not part of a regular physical, or that people aren't getting physicals? What's that? What is it saying about the people who go for 15 years and don't know?
I think there's my guess is people probably aren't going to see their primary care doctor regularly enough, and having these sort of preventive exams and preventive testing. And again, because it's, you know, it's what we call asymptomatic. There are no symptoms until you get further down the road.
So, if you had gone for a yearly annual physical or every 2 year physical in some cases, would the doctor automatically have taken a blood test that would have detected this?
Absolutely. It's recommended that if you have risk factors for diabetes that we do
these
screening
tests.
Well, then at age 45, we should start screening at age 45 at least every 3 years to look for these.
So if you're a skinny person, say you're a guy that's 6 feet tall and you weigh 100, I'm not doing me because these are not my numbers. These are not my numbers. So if you're 6 feet tall and you weigh 175 pounds, you're probably fairly fit, fairly trim. Should that person?
It depends on family history, you know, as well, because there, like we said, there can be lean type 2s. I think it just highlights the importance of everybody having a primary care provider that they see every so often. Certainly, there's other risk factors as well. I mean, when we're talking about prediabetes, we're also talking about cardiovascular risk. So when we identify these things, we look at other things like blood pressure, cholesterol, et cetera.
Now, the number of people around the country with this, it seems to me quite large, 26 million people.
Staggering.
A million in the Carolinas. I was going to ask you to put these numbers into perspective. Yeah. You just did. You called them staggering. They're large numbers.
It's staggering. And I think the reason we became very interested in this is because we were focused on our quality of care we're providing our patients at CHS, and started to look at the data and the literature. And there's lots of things in healthcare you could focus on, and we focus on quite a bit. But this is particularly profound. So just to put the numbers in context here, if you and I were going to go walk out in the streets of Charlotte and Mecklenburg County, and Mecklenburg is actually better than some of the surrounding counties, but if we counted every 10th person, okay, if we just walk around and counted every 10th person, that person would have diabetes.
So 10% of the population.
About 10% of the population
would
has
that
diabetes.
Would that have been the case in 1970 or 1960 or 1950?
No.
So what's going on here? The numbers are obviously increasing. Are they increasing rapidly?
They are rapidly.
Why?
And this goes along with what we're seeing is the rise in obesity and weight gain and, of course, our lifestyle. If you think about just lifestyle in general, it's become even more sedentary, just labor-saving devices. We're in our cars, as we talk about, children don't go outside. These lifestyle changes have really led to the increase of diabetes, especially younger. We're seeing it in younger and younger folks.
Sue Dissinger is here. She's the wellness director of the YMCA, so I'm putting all of the onus on this on her.
Appreciate that.
We've been through several decades now of a gym craze where people have gym memberships, and the YMCAs here in this area are like the best gyms in the world.
That pains me that you would say we're a gym.
Well, fitness centers in the world, it seems to me, with a lot of people taking part, they're members, and they go regularly. So given this decades of gym membership, fitness club membership, why are we still seeing this rise?
And I laugh about it when you say gym, but it is true that most think of the YMCA as a gym or a fitness club. Mm-hmm. So for the larger part of the population who is sedentary, are intimidated. For a period of time, we were studying it, and they were intimidated to come into the YMCA.
So what should we call it?
You're a healthy living center.
Health and wellness center. Health and wellness
center. Just a place to go to get healthy. And that's really what we've been focusing on for the past 3 years is making sure people understand that it's not just about a fitness center with equipment. There are programs that we have developed in conjunction with Carolina's healthcare system to really focus on improving healthy living. But those who are in our buildings, we also recognize, and I'll pick on the senior population for a second, they love the Y. And they do come in regularly. But they're very social. And so what we find is they'll get in the water and they'll have a great time talking, but are we pushing them hard enough to take off the extra weight that they tend to gain through their life? And we find them socializing in the locker rooms and in the lobby. So some might even just come in and go into the steam room or the sauna, and that's all they've done and they've left because they're coming in for more of the social rather than coming in to truly work hard enough to reduce their risk. So that's really...
You know, if I could jump in, we work very closely with Sue and with the Y. It's one of our favorite collaborations. I think your question is right on. You know, the gym craze has been around for decades, and yet you see the country still getting more obese, and in fact, diabetes and prediabetes is an epidemic that continues to grow. So I think the answer is not just the, you know, as you were saying, sort of a fitness. It's not just the physical activity. It's nutrition. Mm-hmm. And it's also, I think it's really tied into, you know, medical, overall clinical care. Going to the gym, I mean, I've actually read of ultramarathoners who are, you know, as thin as can be, who literally get diagnosed with diabetes type 2, you know, as they get older. And so it isn't just the fitness. It's really about nutrition, and it's really about just overall clinical care.
Beverly Hager is here. She's a person living with diabetes, and you've been doing a lot of nodding as this conversation has been going
on. I have.
Particularly about the social aspect of going to the Health and Wellness Center. Known as the Y. Talk to me about yourself. And you don't have to get terribly personal, but last year, I understand, you had high sugar levels that classified you as a type 2 diabetic. And since you found that out, those numbers have gone down, and we'll talk about how you did that, how you accomplished that. But first, I want to hear how you reached the type 2 diabetes stage. Was it a surprise to you when you were diagnosed?
It was. It was a surprise. I thought I was very lucky and very healthy, even though I am an overweight woman. For the longest time, I've not had any issues with anything. And I thought, I guess almost I was immune to having any problems because of my history. And when Dr. Hodges gave me the results of my test, I was just amazed.
And we'll find out more about that in a second. We have to take a break. You're the victim of the break. So we'll come back in a moment here. Charlotte Talks on WFH. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members at Mr. Rogers Windows, a local family business since 1986, offering renewal by Anderson replacement windows and entry door systems installed by trained craftsmen. Product details at MrRogersWindows.com. Well, with Republicans in control of the legislature and the governor's office here in North Carolina, we have made a turn to the right, some say, and that turn runs deeper than just the ideology of our elected representatives. There are some lesser-known organizations and individuals who are exerting influence and helping to set the legislative agenda. It doesn't happen just here in North Carolina. It happens all over the country, and it doesn't just happen with Republicans. It happens with Democrats, too. We can take a look at the influence of money on policy on both sides of the aisle, and we'll do that tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, unemployment insurance first began in the Depression era by FDR. As the Senate weighs extending unemployment benefits, a look at just how it works and answering your questions.
Join that conversation on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about diabetes, the epidemic of type 2 diabetes, how you get it, and some techniques that are being put into place by Carolina's healthcare system and by the YMCA of Charlotte to help get control of that and, in some cases, potentially reverse the effects of the disease. Dr. Kelly Dunn is the chief of the endocrinology division of Carolina's Medical Center. Dr. Zev Neuwirth is chief clinical officer of Carolina's healthcare system. Sue Dissinger is the wellness director of the YMCA of Greater Charlotte. And Beverly Hager is a person living with diabetes. We're just now getting her story. Did you have, you did have pre-diabetes. Do you have any idea how long you were living with diabetes before the diagnosis?
Not a clue.
And no symptoms whatsoever?
None. The only thing that was symptomatic, I guess, that I found out after the fact was between October and January of, I guess, 2008, last year, mm-hmm. I had a weight loss of about 20 pounds, not trying, not doing anything, and come to find out that is a symptom.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That would be a good thing, wouldn't it?
A lot of patients think so when they come in. I've lost weight. But actually what happens is when the blood sugars get so high, sugar spills out into the urine. And essentially what happens is you're urinating out some of the calories you're taking in. So you're actually losing weight in that scenario.
So there's no way to know how long she had been suffering.
No, just that.
But she wasn't suffering. That's
exactly,
the point.
Exactly. Exactly. So there really isn't. It could have been years.
So when you got the diagnosis, did you go in? How did you get it? Why were you diagnosed? Did you just have to go to the doctor for something else? They did a blood test and you found out?
I just went in for just a regular checkup, and I had mentioned about the weight loss, and he just like, well, let's just do some blood tests. Uh-huh. And he did the blood test, and a couple of days later, they called me back in the office, and he was just like, your A1C is 11.
I don't know what that is. What's your A1C?
That's the blood sugar level, correct?
So the A1C is a test that we can do, which is what we're using in our pre-D campaign. It's a point of care, or meaning on site, right? You get the results right away, screening test for diabetes and pre-diabetes. And the number you get back is a percentage, but it correlates to an average blood sugar. So an A1C of 11 would correlate to an average blood sugar probably to 70, somewhere in that range.
Okay, so that's not good.
That's not good.
It's not good. What would good be?
Good would be A1C level. A1C typically normal would be 5.5 or less, or somewhere in
what
that
range.
What would
a good blood sugar level
be? A blood sugar level would be 100 below. It depends on when you're testing it, okay, after a meal or not.
So you had something along the lines of a 270. Did these? Of course, when anybody's diagnosed with anything, you don't really hear what the doctor is saying after that point, because you're going, oh God, what does this mean? What was your reaction?
I was scared. I was scared because my father, mm-hmm, who had passed away in 94, had adult onset diabetes, type 2 diabetes.
Was he overweight as well?
He was.
Okay.
He was. And I thought, I don't want to be my father. Mm-hmm. I don't want to die young.
So you knew what this means. You knew something about diabetes.
I did.
This was not a situation where you were presented with something you knew nothing about. You knew what this meant.
Correct.
And what was your reaction when you presented with? I'm not sure how to ask the question. What went through your mind about what? Okay, I don't want to be my father. So what am I going to do?
That's exactly what I had asked Dr. Hodges. I said, What do I do from here? You know, I don't want to have to take shots. I don't want to take insulin. What do I do? And he had recommended the program at the Y that I eventually went to.
So even at a blood sugar level of 270, mm-hmm. can doctors determine at that particular time, at the initial diagnosis, such as this one, if there's been any physical damage to the body?
Well, for sure. I mean, and we look for signs of that. So just to, you know, we've been talking about diabetes and prediabetes, and I think it's important here because Beverly was concerned, and she was rightly so concerned for these reasons. Number one, diabetes is the number one cause of blindness in this country, the number one cause of blindness. So it affects the arteries in the back of your eye, the retina. It's the number one cause of kidney failure or dialysis in this country, and there are hundreds of thousands of people right now either with kidney transplants or on dialysis as a result of diabetes, number one cause. It's also the number one cause of non-traumatic amputations in this country, too, and again, tens of thousands of amputations are done every year because of basically undiagnosed or untreated diabetes. And on top of that, it's also one of the top two or three causes of heart attacks and strokes. And so Beverly's concern from her own family history is exactly what the literature tells us around this country. So we know, for instance, that over half of the people who literally come into a hospital, probably about two-thirds with a heart attack or with what we call angina, any sort of serious heart problem related to their arteries, about two-thirds of them either have diabetes or literally are diagnosed with diabetes actually as they're coming into the hospital. And so your fear was exactly right. And I think the thing about it is what we know about diabetes, and I think the wonderful thing about Beverly's story is that if you diagnose it and catch it early, you can actually do something. And again, mm-hmm. I hope people aren't getting scared, but I hope this is motivating to people.
Well, it should be. At any given time, I'm told Carolina's healthcare system is treating 100,000 people with type 2 diabetes. How many of their stories are like Beverly's story?
This is a very common thing that we see. People come in and get a new diagnosis, whether it's in the clinic with their primary care doctor or we find them in the hospital. But I think it's important exactly to get the message across that if they do something about it, if they take control, they make lifestyle changes, they can reverse risk. And that's the whole point of this campaign, is to catch people early.
Do you always have pre-diabetes, or can you suddenly be diagnosed with diabetes, type 2 diabetes, and not have gone through the 10 years?
That's a great question. I think there probably are a few cases where people maybe skip right over to diabetes because of medications they've been put on. There's steroids. There's antipsychotic medications that people take for a variety of reasons that can actually really kind of skip people over. But the vast majority of people are going to pass through a pre-diabetes phase.
And I asked you what diabetes was. What is pre-diabetes? I mean, if there are no symptoms or signs, what exactly is going on that would lead you to say, well, that person has prediabetes?
So prediabetes, it's a risk factor. And when we make these determinations, there are points on a continuum. Blood sugars escalate up. And we have found these points on the continuum where we sort of almost artificially say, okay, you've crossed over to diabetes. But that's where there's typically those cut points are where there's an increase of risk. The risk explodes. So prediabetes is something that as clinicians, we say, you're at risk. We need to get this under control. We need to control blood pressure. We need to look at your weight, we are going to look at your cholesterol, and we're going to work with you on a healthy lifestyle because that can have lasting effects for people.
So, you know, and again, the good thing about it is you have this 5 or 10 year period where most of the patients with the type 2 diabetes are in this phase. And I think it's important to note, it is one of the unique conditions in medicine where if you intervene early, if you find it very early in the stage and you do what's right, which is largely around weight loss, it's around physical activity and good nutrition, if you do that, you can literally reduce the progression. You can literally stop the disease dead in its track in a large percentage of patients. That doesn't exist in many situations in healthcare, which is why we're so concerned about it, given the huge prevalence of diabetes and prediabetes. And you know, I mentioned before, Mike, you know, walked around would have diabetes. If we walked around, went outside and counted, every third person has prediabetes.
Now, so that's 33% of the population.
Exactly. And if you look at subpopulations, I know this is, if you look at subpopulations, if you look at people over 65, it goes up to one out of every two people.
What are we doing differently? If this was not going to be the case in 1950 or 60 or 70, what are we doing differently? McDonald's has been around for decades. So has Burger King.
But portion sizes have gone up.
Kentucky Fried Chicken.
So the size of the burgers have gone up. The size of the fries have gone up. The size of the drinks have gone up. That's a big big part of it. We have to retrain people, and I'm sure Sue can understand with the wellness and the nutrition part of things. We have to retrain people to actually understand what an acceptable portion size is.
Yes, I mean, when you go to the movies and you order a small drink, it is bigger than the big drink would have been.
It's the size of the extra large.
Yes, I mean, it's like a whole carton of Coke mm-hmm. in one glass. I mean, what is wrong with us?
Absolutely.
I mean, I couldn't drink that much water.
Absolutely.
We have a question from one of our listeners about acceptable blood sugar levels. Haven't the acceptable level standards been changed a few times over the last decade? And if so, why is this? And has this contributed to the increase in numbers of people with diabetes today?
Well, the numbers have gone down. We have slowly adjusted over the years what we use as our cut point as diabetes, and they have come down. And that's because we have realized that risk goes up with even lower levels of elevation of blood sugars, basically. So that's why we've had to move that number back down. What we're really trying to do is get to people before that risk goes up. So we identify them, so we get aggressive control.
How much of it has to do with the fact nobody eats a home-cooked meal anymore? Seriously. Because if we don't eat out, or we don't eat at a fast food restaurant, we're eating processed frozen foods out of the freezer that taste really good, that you zap for 90 seconds in the microwave, but they're full of stuff that you shouldn't eat.
And that's a portion of it. I mean, certainly we have to learn to work with people and what's pragmatic, what they're going to do in their busy lives. But some of that certainly is true. I mean, if you're buying a package of cookies, you're probably going to eat them faster than if you had to make them yourself. So some of that, the rise of convenience food, I think, is a portion of that.
Elizabeth emails, "There is now sugar in everything," all caps. "I am no longer able to find a jar of spaghetti sauce without additional sugar. We find that we have to cook from scratch every meal. We can't even buy the sesame kale salad in the Earth Fair deli because they added sugar to their kale salad this past year. We don't have diabetes, but we don't want it either."
Right. I think she's making a great point there. And again, this is one of the reasons why it's so important for everyone to, as much as you can, figure out your risk and figure if, in fact, you're in that zone. You're asking before, what is prediabetes? It is sort of this journey, if you will, of insulin intolerance. It's and some people can manage carbohydrates and they don't have this problem. And some, you know, are more prone to getting prediabetes and diabetes.
Has it been difficult for you, Beverly, to find foods that will help you in your quest to reverse this diabetes?
It has been crazy to try and find food. I do a lot of vegetables, mm-hmm. Fresh vegetables. I do still do some processed food, but I'm a label reader now. I read to see what's in the product, and I do a lot more cooking than I did.
There's an app which I have on my phone. If I could just get my phone to turn on, I have an app on my phone called, Fooducate, mm-hmm. FOODUCATE, and you can scan the barcodes of things in the grocery store, and it will grade products A to F. It is astounding to me, if it's as accurate, it is astounding to me how many foods that you would think would be great for you give you C minuses, D pluses, Fs. Mm-hmm. I won't name any brand names, but there's some brand names out there that you would think, this is going to be great. It's going to taste good. It's going to be good for me. And boy, it is not. Is that part of the problem too?
I think there is a lot going on with how food manufacturers are trying to sell. We went through crazes where everything was low sodium, and then it was low sugar, and then it was the corn syrup. And I think there is a combination of things that have to happen. It's not just about learning how to read food labels, learning how to find fresh foods. Mm-hmm. There's also the lifestyle management of you have a busy life, mm-hmm. and how do you prepare to fit those foods in? So I could buy some of the easy foods or I could buy some of the fresh foods. Both are still going to have to take work and figure out how to fit those in. And that's where the lifestyle management has to be included in how we move forward.
So the Y has partnered with Carolina's healthcare system in this quest to get diabetes under control. Aside from exercise programs, which mm-hmm. you offer and always have offered, mm-hmm. what are you doing?
So there's a couple of different ways we look at this. So for those who are living with prediabetes and through the risk campaign of having them take the risk assessment, and then if they are at risk, then we have them do the A1C blood test. If they are coming within the range of prediabetes, then we put them through that lifestyle management program. We're getting them connected on both sides of the organizations. We have over 60 coaches trained to deliver an evidence-based program that has them focused on, in this particular curriculum, they're going to focus on fat grams. Mm-hmm. They're going to focus on increasing their physical activity to 150 minutes a week. It's going to be in a group support session. It's going to be about how to fit all this into your lifestyle. So from a prediabetes standpoint, we're armed and ready and already starting to run those programs on both sides of the organization. From the standpoint of, we're going to find people who are living with diabetes and they're not managing it. And that's where another program, the medical referral program, and specifically our diabetes intervention track, really supports. And the difference with this is when you're diagnosed in a clinical setting, that term clinical, I would say that's where Carolinas has done an excellent job in placing the nurses in our facilities. And they have over 15, 20 years experience working with people who have trouble adopting lifestyle behavior change. They're empathetic, but also can hold you accountable.
You said, Beverly, that when you got the diagnosis, you didn't want to be your father who had gone through this with diabetes himself. And so you have been involved with the Y programs, is that correct?
I have been since May of last year.
How difficult was it to begin? Because, you know, an object in motion tends to stay in motion, an object at rest tends to stay at rest. How difficult was it to get involved in that?
The first step was the hardest. Actually going in and getting the assessment and all, mm-hmm. that was the easy part. Actually going for the exercise, that was the hard part.
What made it difficult?
Well, as an overweight woman, I really haven't even been in shorts in like 3 years, let alone a bathing suit. And the opportunity to do the water aerobics due to some other disabilities that I have, I was scared.
Mm-hmm.
I was embarrassed. I was ashamed.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat in the parking lot outside the YMCA for probably about 10 minutes crying because of just the shame and stuff. And I walked in and it was almost kind of like coming home in a way. The people, they were wonderful. They were wonderful. And I wasn't the only one.
Yeah. You're not alone.
Right.
There are other people there who were just like you. And
exactly.
Maybe even more overweight.
A few.
But to keep it going, I mean, that takes dedication. I mean, once you, I know this for a fact because when I used to run a lot, you have to do it. I mean, you feel like you've got to do it, not because somebody told you you had to do it, but you get into this routine and I guess the endorphins kick in and you have to do it. Have you reached the stage yet where you feel good about going every couple of days?
Oh, I do. And I feel guilty when I don't go. I will watch the clock, and there's been a couple of days when I've just like, I'm not going to go today. And I'll sit there and look at the clock. Oh, I can make it. I can make it. Oh, I'm going to go. And so I go.
Yeah. And you nodded when Sue was talking about older people spending a lot of time socializing as opposed to exercising. At least they got themselves there.
They do both. Yeah.
But you nodded in recognition of that. Are you one of those socializers, or are you actually there to exercise?
I do exercise. I do, and I'm very diligent about it when I start. But I come early, so I can do the socializing.
Okay.
And talking to all the ladies and stuff.
I want to talk about a routine that people get into, not only a physical exercise routine, but an eating routine and the regimen that they would have to be on to prevent this, to reverse this. And I also want to talk about this risk assessment that you're offering at Carolinas Medical Center, because it's really quick and it's pretty easy and eye-opening at the same time. We're going to come back and talk about all of that and more. Stay with us at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and City of Lancaster Performing Arts hosting The Letterman, a 60s group known for close harmony pop songs with easy arrangements. February 15th, tickets at lancastercitysc.com/performingarts. Coming up on the Diane Rehm Show at 10 o'clock, unemployment insurance first started in the Depression era by President Roosevelt. As the Senate weighs extending unemployment benefits, they take a look at how it works, and they'll take a crack at answering your questions as well. Coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. Perhaps you have questions about diabetes. Well, now's the time. You can get in touch with us many different ways simply by going to wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. And we're coming right back.
I'm Rachel Martin, and I know there's a lot going on in your world. Deadlines to meet, kids to carpool, life to manage. Your time is precious, and when you have some time to spend thinking about the larger world, I hope you'll turn to us. News to keep you informed, conversations to keep you inspired. Join me on Weekend Edition Sunday from NPR News.
News happens all weekend, and we'll keep you up on the latest with Weekend Edition, Saturday and Sunday from 8 to 10 on 90.7 WFAE.
That's negative.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm not negative. The show's not negative. We're going through the pre-assessment test here with Dr. Zev Neuwirth, the Chief Clinical Officer of Carolina's Healthcare System. Dr. Kelly Dunn is here. She's the Chief of the Endocrinology Division of Carolina's Medical Center. Sue Dissinger is the Wellness Director of the YMCA of Greater Charlotte. And Beverly Hager is a person living with diabetes. The healthcare system is offering an online risk assessment to identify individuals who are at higher risk for developing diabetes. Anyone can take this assessment?
Absolutely. It's www.carolinashealthcare.org/diabetes.
Okay. carolinashealthcare.org/diabetes. And if you don't have a computer, and we'll put all this on our website, but if you don't have a computer, you can call this number and take the test. 704-512-3971. 512-3971. 7-1. You seem surprised by that, so I hope that's true.
It is.
I read that yesterday, so I hope that's true.
It's a quick thing.
We can do it on the air. It's seven questions.
Yes, go for it.
Are you a woman who has had a baby weighing more than 9 pounds at birth?
Are you taking this survey online?
Yeah.
On the air?
I'm checking yes on that one.
do you
have a sister or brother with diabetes? Do you have a parent with diabetes? Find your height on this chart. Do you weigh as much or more than the weight listed for your height? We can't go through all of these, but this is why you go online and take this. Are you younger than 65 years of age and get little or no exercise in a typical day? Are you between 45 and 64 years of age? Are you 65 or older? Now, those are easy questions.
Mm-hmm.
Is there an answer key somewhere on the website that tells you, yes, you said yes to all these things and no to all these things, and therefore you are or you are not at risk?
Yes. This, if you go online and take the survey, it'll tell you if you are at increased risk or not. And some of the questions are weighed more heavily. Some are more important. So, for instance, we know that prediabetes and type 2 diabetes become much more prevalent as you get older, over 65. And so, in fact, that question is weighed particularly heavily.
So is it foolproof? If you take this test and you discover that you are not at risk, could you be at risk?
The answer is yes.
And if you find that you are at risk, could you be not pre-diabetic or not have diabetes?
Yes. So absolutely. So simply said, just because you score, the survey says that you are at risk does not mean you have pre-diabetes, but you have a higher chance of having pre-diabetes, and therefore we would recommend, as, by the way, this survey comes from the CDC, the Center for Disease Control. So this has been evidence-based. It's based on the research. And so it just means that you're more likely to have it, which is why we are asking people who score positive on the survey, who score high risk on the survey, to come into one of our information sessions at one of the local YMCAs, which we're holding literally on a weekly basis. And we are offering a free hemoglobin A1C test. We're offering a free blood test to determine whether you have prediabetes or diabetes, again, based on an increased risk off of this survey.
And they can find that information on the website. So when they go through that test,
on which
there will
website?
The Carolina's Healthcare. Yeah. There'll be a drop-down list that'll tell them where those open access places places are for them to go and get that.
We have placed the web link for the assessment and also the phone number on our website at wfae.org/charlottetalk. So if you need to rush off and do that now, we've got you scared enough to go do that. You can do that while you're listening to the program or well afterward as well. This is a question that really has nothing to do about the topic, but I think it's amazing and it's wonderful that you're giving these free blood tests to people who come to these YMCA screenings, but usually blood tests are monstrously expensive. How can you afford to do this?
So the blood test does cost and it is expensive, but this is part of our...
It costs me as the person getting the blood test?
We're giving these blood tests for free.
For free, okay.
So our commitment actually in the pre-diabetes reduce the risk challenge for this year is to give about 10,000 of these blood tests away for free. Again, this is part of our community service. It's part of our community health strategy. Now, I think part of it too is, as you all were alluding to before, It's important. Go online, take the survey, and we're hoping that you do it. We're hoping that you get your friends and colleagues to do it. We hope you organize people at work to go online, do the survey. If you are at higher risk, according to the survey, come into one of the information sessions. And again, this won't cost you money. We'll do the blood test for free. But I think the most important part of it is that if you are positive for prediabetes and or diabetes, we will, as Sue was saying before, we have this National Diabetes Prevention Program. It's a 16-week program. It took years and years to develop this program by the CDC and the NIH. So it's a research-based program. It will help you lose 5 to 7% of your body weight, and it'll greatly reduce your risk for going on and progressing with disease. And that's really the whole point of this. You know, you were saying before how hard it is. What do I eat? What do I buy? How do I cook? How do I exercise? What do I do? How do I keep the weight off? All those kinds of questions are very, very difficult to do on your own. I think the real magic secret sauce here is that it's not just going through the survey and going through the blood test, but it's actually enrolling in this program that the CDC has created that we and the Y are collaborating and providing it at a very low cost.
This is described as an evidence-based lifestyle change program. What does that mean? What are you telling people to do? Is it tailored to each individual's situation? How does it work?
Well, there are set goals. So as Zev was alluding to, you have to lose 5 to 7% of your body weight in order to reduce your risk for getting type 2 diabetes. So the curriculum is very strict on focusing on fat grams, and the individualization comes into for each individual and what their current body weight is. That's where the fat grams are very customized to that person. But how the approach, they really work in a support group type setting to get the group to help them move from point A to point B. From an exercise standpoint, it's very much the same way. Customized, but also done in a group setting. So exercise is about what you enjoy doing. It's about finding environments where you feel supported and where you feel encouraged and accountable. So they'll do that collectively together throughout this process, but really focused on that. You know, you're going to check in with your weight each week, and we're going to focus on that 5 to 7% of that body weight reduction. Mm. That's critical for us to do.
And how much does this cost a person involved?
So here's the other beauty of what we're doing together. So the cost of the program, the true cost of the program is over $400. But when you look what we're doing right now, it's for anyone, it's going to range from $30 to $100. We're looking at supporting on both sides of the organizations a significant amount of that cost.
There are a lot of people who are not well-to-do, who are who don't have enough money to do that. Are there scholarships? I mean, is there a way to get into the program if you cannot afford it?
Absolutely. And that's where that range is from $30 to $100 is where they're going to get customization to their what it looks like for them economically. Mm-hmm. And if we get to a point where we have someone in front of us who truly cannot afford to pay that $30, we will figure it out. Because if they're sitting in front of us and they truly do have prediabetes or they have diabetes, we will figure it out.
And you don't have to be a member of the Y to take advantage of this. Is that right?
You get access to the Y in certain cases, but you don't have to be a member of the YMCA. The beauty of these open access times where people can come in and get that blood glucose test is that they will have a registered nurse there. Mm-hmm. They'll have the lifestyle counselor there to help them figure out, once you get your results, if you fall prediabetes or diabetes, they're there to figure out what's your next step.
Are you on this program, Beverly?
I was. I guess timed out of the program back in October, but I was on the program.
Timed out means you've successfully completed all the steps. What does that mean?
I did the 16 weeks and thoroughly enjoyed it, and now I'm just going on my own.
And are you maintaining what they set out for you in your personal program?
I am maintaining. I'm wanting to focus this year more on the nutrition aspect. Last year it was kind of the exercise aspect, and I'm wanting to increase the nutrition aspect of it this year.
Which is the more difficult for you personally, the exercise portion of this or the nutrition portion of this?
For me, it's both. I am a Southern girl. I love my food. I love my food.
Yeah.
And the exercise, I was sedentary. You know, I didn't really do a lot. And so they've both been equally hard.
A year ago, you had blood sugar levels, which classified you as a type 2 diabetic. I'm told that you have since reversed those numbers. Give me an idea of what you have done. I know you go to exercise, et cetera. How drastically have you had to change your diet, for instance?
For me, I've cut back on the Reese's Pieces and things like that. I don't eat as much candy.
You miss them?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah.
Because sugar is a drug, isn't it?
It very much is. It's addicting. It very much is. I am now to a Diet Cola, Diet Coke, Diet Sprite. I drink the diet drinks.
Could you
increase
do water?
My water.
Could you do water and not the diet stuff?
I do water
God knows
a
what's
lot.
In that stuff.
water is like my staple. It comes to the point now where I crave water.
Mm. That's a good sign, isn't it?
For me, yes.
It's a great sign.
Okay, so?
And I watch my portion sizes, which is really hard because if it tastes good, you want to eat it.
Right.
But you have to stop. You have to tell yourself this is not right.
And you bought smaller plates so it looks big on the plate?
We did, actually. We bought the smaller – we use paper plates at our house, and we bought the smaller Dixie plates, and it helps.
You know, Mike, before you were saying all of this, it's not one thing. It's not just the diet. It's not just the exercise.
It's not.
It is a lifestyle change, and you were alluding before. It's about forming new habits, and I think again, one of the great things about the program is, you know, getting into a group that's focused on this and a well-organized program, 16-week program that we in the Y are offering. You actually, and I can see it in Beverly's, you're helping people develop healthful habits.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they'll last long. And my guess is, you know, Beverly still has a relationship with the Y and is still, right, and still using it. So that's a habit. Hopefully you still have a relationship with your CHS doctor.
I do.
Right? And so you see that, I mean, it's not just one thing. It's all those things. But, you know, one thing we want to mention, too, is, again, it could be a scary thing to think about diabetes, think about going online to this survey on our website or going to one of the information sessions. But I think the hopeful thing is, and this is important to understand, if you do anything early on in this disease, and again, this doesn't exist for many conditions, but in diabetes and prediabetes, if you find it out that you have prediabetes or early onset diabetes type 2, and you do something, you intervene with diet or nutrition or even if a medication, you can actually alter the trajectory of the disease for your entire life. You can actually make a big improvement.
Well, she's lowered her numbers evidently substantially here. Can you say that you've been cured?
I don't think cure is the right word to use. Maintain, put on hold the disease, fighting the disease, because it could come back. If I just, you know, flip off the exercise and the diet and go back to my old ways, it could totally revert itself.
Do you like your new ways?
I do. I do. Not that I don't sometimes miss the old ways.
Do you backslide? Every once in a while, do you sneak some ice cream?
Oh, yes.
I would.
Oh, yes.
Well, I think an important part for people to understand is that you can still have things that you like as long as you keep it under control.
Moderation.
Mm-hmm. One of my former mentors when I was training, who was a past president of the American Diabetes Association, said there should be 5 days a year where your sugars are high, your birthday, Christmas, Thanksgiving. So you can still occasionally indulge. But this is developing long-term lifestyle. And I do want to make a point that people, if you can get this under control early, it can have lasting effects. Because as someone, I treat diabetes all day, every day. And often what I'm seeing are people who are 10, 15, 20 years down the road.
Mm.
It gets much, much harder the longer it goes if you don't treat it.
Is that because damage has been done?
Exactly. Exactly. And so when you get to a point where there's sort of no return, we have to do insulin. We have to do lots of insulin.
And you mentioned that this is a leading cause of blindness in the country, but it also leads to heart disease, kidney disease, and stroke. This is a serious, serious thing.
It is serious. It's not just a cause. It's the number one cause of blindness in this country. You do have to, Mike, you do have to give up, you know, certain things, certain sweets and whatever. But I think the point, too, on Beverly's side, and I could sort of see it as we're listening to her, is the question is, what are you gaining?
Yeah.
And what you're gaining is you're going to greatly, greatly reduce your risk of having heart attack, stroke, you know, blindness, kidney disease. So that's the upside. And I think people would, you know, choose life over, you know, having a suite every once in a while, right?
There are.
And the focus of whether you're a diabetic or in pre-diabetic state, there's a team of experts. Even in just the past 5 years, we, from a nutrition standpoint, it's evolving so quickly and changing. Registered dietitians are in our wise now, and they're a critical role to success for those in helping to manage diabetes who are living with type 2 diabetes.
There are a couple of myths about diabetes that you want to dispel, and one is that this condition isn't serious. It is. People would be surprised to learn, I believe, that it causes more deaths each year than breast cancer, which is a major charitable thing, breast cancer and AIDS combined. Mm-hmm. More people die of diabetes. Another myth, eating sweets is the main reason people get diabetes. Not true. What is true?
Well, so in terms of causing diabetes, it's a lifestyle issue. It's not just sweets. It's physical activity, and it is nutrition. I think the point is this is highly prevalent. You listen to Bev's story, and again, think about it. Probably one out of every three or four people in this area are at a higher risk for diabetes. That is, they have prediabetes. So it's high prevalent. There are high risks and high consequences if you don't get it early and if you don't treat it. And the wonderful thing is we have great treatment early on. You don't need to go to surgery. You don't need to take medications early on. You can treat this literally with physical activity and nutrition. I mean,
it's really actually better than any medicine we have.
Yeah.
It is. It's more effective.
The Y and the hospital system kicked off this Pre-D Challenge Reverse the Risk program in November, and your goal is to get 50,000 people to complete a risk assessment by November of this year. How many people do you know have taken this assessment so far? I only have 30 seconds.
I think we have about 8,000 or so that have taken it so far. So,
how many people are involved in these Y programs? Do you know?
Well, we're going through that period of they got to take the assessment and get their A1C screen before we enroll them in the program.
But Mike, I think the point is if people can go online, do the www.carolinashealthcare.org/diabetes. I think that's the point. Organize yourself, your neighbors, your friends.
And there's information there to get you to the Y programs after that?
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll put that with that stuff is on our website. That information is on our website, including the phone number you can call if you don't have access to a computer to take that survey. Dr. Kelly Dunn with the Carolinas Medical Center, Dr. Zev Neuwirth with Carolinas Healthcare Systems, Sue Dissinger from the YMCA of Greater Charlotte, and Beverly Hager. Thank you for the hour. Good luck to you.